I am in Switzerland, and today I have a doctor's appointment, and then the rest of the day is going to be filled with Definity calls. And tonight we have a meetup in Zurich, which I'm super excited about. We are running a Definity meetup in Zurich today. Dom is also here, and I'm just on my way there now.
What's the purpose of all this? Why would you want an internet supercomputer? We've already got Amazon Web Services and Google Cloud and things like that, right? So why do we need an internet supercomputer? Basic purpose is to upload to cyberspace software, data, computation, and money. So when I say upload to cyberspace, what I mean is that the internet computer doesn't have a geography. Doesn't reside in some country. You've got all these different computers interacting using a protocol. They generate this virtual internet computer, and it looks like a computer, it smells like a computer. You can interact with it over the internet, you can install software on it, the software will run. To all intents and purposes, the internet computer is a computer. Also means, that you can create things free of the direct control of a government, right? If the internet computer is in cyberspace, what regulatory purview and jurisdiction applies to it? It's just a computer in cyberspace that you can interact with. Right? It doesn't reside in a country, so the laws can't apply to it. Of course, we want people to upload software, data, computation, so on, the money to the internet computer, partly because we want to see an open, decentralized internet. So in the same way the internet is decentralized, we want computation and data and so on to be decentralized too. And that was part of the original vision of the internet. But the internet computer is also a new kind of technology stack, so it brings features and properties that don't exist currently. An example would be eternal execution. The internet computer is unstoppable. You can write software that runs forever. There won't be any storage APIs or files or configuration files in the internet computer. The idea is that you just write software and that software runs forever. This is a kind of non-technical, general introduction to the internet computer. There are four main applications of the internet computer. First one is private software systems. So that's kind of what we've been talking about already. E-commerce, HR system, order management, inventory, audit trail, accounting, marketing. Business software operated by the owner. Could also be government software, right? It could be just some software, like a website to pay your parking ticket or something. Second quadrant is decentralized business infrastructure, or DBI. So this is something that a lot of people weren't really interfaced with. It's a sort of corporate application of this kind of platform. The idea is here that an industry will create an open shared platform, right? An open platform that's shared by all the participants in an industry in order to create some synergies or derive some efficiencies or release liquidity. So supply chain is something that's talked about a lot. I know that Foxconn has a big ambition to create a supply chain for its electronics industry because it has like 20,000 suppliers. A lot of these guys want more liquidity. So if you can put everything into a supply chain that's trustless, you can invite people in to finance invoices. There's lots of other applications, like there's the Tracer chain I was involved with, which is a big De Beers group of companies. Rosa's joining, so that looks like it'll have like 85% of the world's diamond supply on it. The purpose there is to track the movement of diamonds from a mine in Botswana through to a wholesaler, through to a cutter in India, through to a jewelry factory in Paris, through to Tiffany's in London. Third quadrant is decentralized internet services. This is really about creating open source businesses. So the idea is that you take a service, you tokenize it, you create autonomous software that exists independently of any organization. The tokens can be used in the governance system to update the software. So it's like an open source version, a business version of an open source software project, right? So the actual service itself is open source. And the governance system can, put out bug bounties or, bounties for the addition of new features. There are a bunch of reasons in the first instance why that will be attractive. Now this will take a bit longer to happen, but it's gonna happen. In Silicon Valley, there's this thing called platform risk. Platform, VCs in Silicon Valley look out for platform risk. What it means is that you build some startup, it's going gangbusters, but you have a dependency on some other organization, and that other organization pulls the rug from out under you. And this happens all the time. So, well-known example is a company called Zynga. Who's heard of Zynga? Like a social games company created Farmville. You heard of Farmville? Like, it's huge. It was like a social game that ran on Facebook. They had like 100 million users or something. Zynga IPO'd, and it was going great. Unfortunately then, Facebook decided they wanted to change the mechanisms, the rules, that governed how social games companies like Zynga could promote their games. And the moment they did that, of course, Zynga found it much harder to promote its games. Now it's at like a $1 billion valuation or something like that. Zynga was going gangbusters, but it had a platform risk. In this case, it was building on top of Facebook, and Facebook pulled the rug from underneath it. And there are so many stories like that in Silicon Valley. I could just go on listing them hour after hour. It's a huge, huge problem. The reason that open source autonomous software services, so open source businesses that are running on autonomous software, will be interesting is that those services can provide much better guarantees, for example, about their APIs. So imagine you had an open source version of LinkedIn. Well, I can tell you a story about a company I knew in Palo Alto. It's called RelateIQ. It was a unicorn. It was this really cool service that would look into your company's software email and messaging systems and create like a graph of all the communications in inside your company. You could like hover over the vertices in the graph and a little profile would pop up. So you could see who was talking to who was waiting to get an email from somebody. And this, of course, worked outside the organization too. So it's a really useful tool. But of course, they depended upon the LinkedIn API to get information about the person. So when you hovered your mouse over the vertices in the graph, a little profile popped up. $1 billion company, everyone's super excited about. LinkedIn decided that it was going to withdraw the API. And the only people that can query the LinkedIn API were going to be Microsoft and Salesforce. So, you know, RelateIQ did the only thing that it could, and it sold itself to Salesforce for $240 million. So if you imagine a world where all of these internet services are really open source businesses, right, created using autonomous software, well, if you're an entrepreneur or an innovator, where would you want to build your service? Would you want to build your service on the traditional internet, on Amazon Web Services, and integrate with the APIs of LinkedIn? Or would you rather build on the internet computer and integrate with the APIs of some open source business that gave you much, much better guarantees about the availability of that API? So what you get is a kind of mutualized network effect that will become very, very powerful over time. Once the internet computer, or if we don't succeed, some equivalent really takes off, the network effects will become overwhelming. All of the innovators, all of the entrepreneurs are going to want to build on the internet computer. They get guarantees about the rug not being pulled from underneath their feet. Much better environment for a startup or someone who's entrepreneurially minded, right? The other reason that the internet computer will be attractive for building the next generation of internet services is that we have technology that will create crypto lockboxes. What that means is you can design software that keeps its data or parts of its data in a crypto lockbox. Now, there are different ways of designing this. If you want to, you can design it in such a way that no human being can ever get the data. Inside the crypto lockbox, it's in plain text, but you can't get in. Simple application, imagine an internet dating application. Right? People forget that something like Tinder very likely will possibly, or lots of them, right, the data could be like Ashley Madison, it could be hugely embarrassing. This kind of technology can put that data in a crypto lockbox, so that the user gets guarantees. That's another reason why people will prefer to use internet services that aren't hosted by a company, right, where your private data is residing on some server that private company runs. All of these internet dating sites, if the team makes one misconfiguration error in the network, the hackers will be in, the database will be out. If there's one disgruntled employee, the hackers will be in, the database will be out. And it's all just waiting to happen. And, you know, people could be on it in their 20s, and then they're in their 40s, and then, all of a sudden the thing's out. I mean, at least in my view, people, should have a right to a private life. And so I think, the next thing we're going to see is that, users begin to demand, as more of these hacks take place and there's more misuse of user data, people are going to demand guarantees, stronger guarantees about how their personal data is used, and also about privacy, right? They're going to want to know why their private data isn't going to become public entertainment fodder or worse in the future. So finally, we have like decentralized finance, and Definity is not built for ICOs, but no doubt people will want to run ICOs on Definity. It's a very sort of popular application of this kind of technology. But we're also interested in much more serious applications like borrowing and lending, insurance. I think a lot of this will come after some of the other stuff, right? Because to do decentralized finance, you really need what we call crypto fiat, which is a current token that mirrors a traditional fiat. There's a project called FI. And it's designed to create, through borrowing and lending, works the same way as commercial banks, creates what we call crypto fiat, so FI USD, FI CHF. Governance. Although there's a case for not having any governance, like Ethereum, the code is law. Definity does have a governance system, but Definity is, remember, a decentralized network. It's meant to be the internet computer. It's not meant to be some company's computer. We need to have a system that doesn't run counter to that aim. We can't have governance depending on the Definity Foundation. The Definity Foundation is just a not-for-profit foundation that's funded to develop the technology and to help promote the network and so on, but it's not our job to make decisions about who's running on the internet computer. The whole point is that it's an open It's an open public resource, right? Our solution is to use algorithmic governance. So we have a thing called the blockchain nervous system. It's not nearly as complex as it sounds, actually. Ironically, the blockchain nervous system is probably by far the simplest bit of Definity. Because you use it in liquid democracy. So you can sort of imagine starting off with something like, you know, where you're delegating your vote to somebody else. We kind of work something like this. You can create a neuron, which is like a voting entity. Create a neuron by depositing some Definities. The voting power of the neuron is proportional to the number of Definities that you deposited in it. We create an incentive to make sure the Definity network's well run by requiring that you can only get your Definities back that you've staked inside the neuron by dissolving the neuron, which takes a year. It's going to be 3 months, but it's going to be a year. So, you know, once you've created a neuron, say you can participate in voting on proposals, you can't get the, you know, your voting power is proportional to the number of Definities you've staked. You can't get them back without dissolving the neuron, which takes a year. So you sure as hell want to make sure that every proposal that goes through increases the value of Definities, right? Which is a kind of proxy for adoption. But that's the objective of the blockchain nervous system. Why would you do this? Well, you actually get paid for voting. Nonetheless, many of the things you'll be voting on, you will not have the expertise to vote on or have no interest in voting. So you can configure your neuron to vote automatically. Proposals come in with different topics. You configure the neuron differently for different topics. So let's say there's a cryptography topic. Not many people have the expertise, inclination, or interest to try and vote on cryptography. So what you do is configure your neuron to follow some other neurons. The idea is that neuron models can have a public neuron and a private neuron. And a public neuron just has one Definity in it. You would advertise the address of your public neuron. So it's just like a, you know, like a public key kind of thing, right? You can advertise it on your Twitter, on your Reddit. You can say, well, here's some people, here's a well-known cryptographer, here's, you know, some academic, here's somebody who works Definity, here's an investor who's interested in this kind of thing. And I'll say, right, I'm going to configure my neuron to watch these five other neurons, right, on the cryptography topic. And if three of those neurons vote adopt on a proposal, my neuron will follow and adopt. If three of them vote reject, my neuron will follow and reject. If neither of those things happen after a timeout, I'm just going to vote reject. Simple enough. Of course, the effect is that, you know, generally speaking, proposals will come in, and then the blockchain nervous system will kind of cascade to a decision. Anyway, who's pursuing this? So there's a Definity Foundation, not-for-profit foundation, it's our scientific research, system implementation. But of course, you know, when the network's up and running, we're going to stand behind the network, we're going to be trying to mitigate threats, provide network support. We'll also have an ops center that works with people that need to submit blockchain nervous system proposals. So if you're a corporation, and you wrote a whole load of software and installed it on the internet computer and it went wrong because, you know, you might have done it in such a way that it's very locked down for security reasons and you need the help of the blockchain nervous system to fix it, right? Definity Foundation will help out and help people create proposals and hopefully get them through. Currently, you know, we've got the biggest research centers in Palo Alto. We do some work with some guys in the SAN at EBFL. We've got some an admin center in Neuchâtel. We've got some people here in Zurich. We've got a new lab going up, a guy called Yan Kamenish, who was a principal research scientist at IBM, just joined, we'll be running that. We've got a guy in Cambridge. Again, we're going to try and build out a lab there. We've got a guy in Germany, this guy, Andreas Rosberger, designed the WebAssembly. And we've got three guys in Tokyo, of all places. So we've also got our own venture capital funds, so we can invest in people, you know, things that are being built on top. And sort of generally, you know, we're trying to build out what we call, so this is a bit of a silly expression, but this NASA for decentralization, because we believe that if this internet computer thing is really going to succeed, in order for anybody to trust it, there needs to be a very substantial organization that stands behind it. And so people can be sure that, you know, that in every time zone in the world, there's a big team of people monitoring the network, ready to jump into action the moment there's any kind of issue arises. You know, there needs to be a big team of people helping people submit proposals to blockchain nervous systems. It's a completely new thing, right? It takes some years before people become familiar with the process. It's been an organization that, you know, organizes developer conferences and things like that. So I actually think that, you know, when the internet computer is running at scale, you know, the foundation itself, if this project works, could have thousands of people, could employ thousands of people. So, you know, we're scaling up as quick as we can, and we're growing all the time. And there's a jobs page on the website.